Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Second time's the charm. 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow, John Schmuck with you. It's presented by DraftKings right here on Giants.com. And Lance, as we attempted to talk about before, obviously the big news, the Giants have not made this official yet, and I stress that as we discuss it, but everyone's seen all the reports from the previous evening with Ralph Vacchiano and Art Stapleton, and everyone else has picked it up since then. That it appears as though, and again, the Giants have not made this official, that they've decided to stay in-house with their head coaching decision and hire offensive coordinator Ben McAdoo.
Well, there's been a track record in place dating back to the 1920s when it comes to this franchise and promotions. I was actually doing a little homework the other night, and you look at 17 head coaches, 13 have been former players and assistants, and this is going to be the 10th time involving a promotion. So, I mean, this is not necessarily a surprise based on the reports, the fact that the Giants value continuity, and they value, obviously, what Eli Manning had to say, that he wanted to see somebody internally continue what they worked on over the last 2 years with respect to this offense. And you look at the numbers, the offensive numbers were impressive over the last 2 years. This is going to at least enable them to continue on that front. We'll see what happens with respect to the rest of the coaching staff. But, you know, McAdoo, even when he came aboard, John, there was always chatter about that. Not necessarily he would be the next guy up in terms of head coach, but had upside, had potential because of what he did under Mike McCarthy in Green Bay.
Hey, no question about it. Now, John Mara, when he spoke to the media after last season, said that was kind of nonsense and I never even met the guy before he came in here and got the job. But obviously they've liked what he's done the last 2 years. And I think a lot of it has, Lance, has to do with his temperament, the way he goes about his business. He's a great nuts and bolts football guy. He's serious about what he does. He is a Tom Coughlin type of temperament, to be quite honest with you. That's one of the reasons they've gotten along so well. He's from Western Pennsylvania. He's a blue-collar guy. And he just seems to be the type of guy that fits the persona that the Giants want to lead the organization.
And I think you could tell that based on how he interacts with the media, how he conducts his press conference. Very straightforward, very businesslike, X's and O's guy, not going to get out of line and so forth. So I would agree. I think the comparison in terms of his demeanor with what you just went through with Tom Coughlin, there's a lot of similarities there. And, you know, in terms of the locker room, the makeup of the locker room, I think you also need to take that into consideration. You know, these players are familiar with Ben McAdoo. They're familiar with his personality, and you want that continuation from where you left off with Tom Coughlin. So, I mean, I'm sure that was another aspect that was weighed. There's not going to be a huge adjustment period, John. I mean, this is a guy that's been in-house. They've dealt with him, offensive players, defensive players. So I'm sure how he conducts himself compared to how Coughlin conducted himself, I don't think there's going to be a huge disparity where the players are going to need, you know, a month or two to say, oh, this is a rude awakening for us.
But, of course, the big adjustment is going to be not for the players but for Ben McAdoo. And we've spoken about this before on the show, Lance. You know, being a coordinator is as close as you can get to being a head coach, but it's still not a fair copy and a fair experience to show somebody what it's really like to be in the big chair, wearing the headset, having the clipboard, and making those types of big overarching team decisions during the week, but more importantly, on game day. It's like all these people running for president. You can say, I was a senator, I was a CEO. Nothing prepares you for the job except for actually doing the job. So he's going to have a lot of new things on his plate and figure out exactly how he's going to execute this job and deal with the day-to-day stuff that a head coach has to deal with that a coordinator really doesn't have to mess with.
Well, I mean, think about the adjustment, though, John, that he had to make when he first came to the Giants organization. He never called plays
right
prior to being the offensive coordinator, and we had similar conversations. How was that going to go about? You know, how would he be as a play caller? Something new. It's a brand new craft. He watched under Mike McCarthy, and the transition was rather smooth. Now, like you said, number one, is he going to continue to call plays? That'll be something, obviously, that he'll have to answer, you know, when he interacts with the media. But if he's not going to call plays, now, like you said, you got to be a guy that's going to oversee the flow of the game, challenge plays,
time,
you know, more managing in term, as opposed to the nuts and bolts, the X's and O's. So it's going to be a similar transition, just like we saw 2 years ago when he became an offensive play caller for the first time.
And it was made easier, obviously, because he had a guy like Tom Coughlin here who's so steeped in offense, he could help him along calling plays, managing the offense, things like that. When you're a head guy, though, that's it. The buck stops with you on game day, and you're the final decider. So there are a bunch of differences, and, of course, depending on what he ends up doing with the staff, a lot of rumors out there regarding that, too. If you get some guys with head coaching experience on your staff, that can help you prepare for some of those things and maybe not take some of the things off your plate because you want your head coach making those decisions, but certainly having you better prepared for what might come now that you are the head coach.
Absolutely. And, you know, right now, if you look at the staff, and we don't know what's going to happen with respect to the staff, you know, Spags is a guy that has head coaching experience. If he decides to bring in somebody from the outside, certainly you can point to a few candidates that have some head coaching experience, and that could always help a coach who's been a play caller now transition to the game management side of things. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Just like Tom Coughlin would say, he relied on a lot of his assistants, too, in terms of managing a game as well, and there were plenty of people on staff, both currently this year as well as in the past, who had head coaching experience.
And obviously, I think in a lot of ways, again, the Giants have not made this official, but if they do end up announcing Ben McAdoo's new head coach, I think from a lot of circumstances, and you mentioned Eli being in the same offense, it makes a lot of sense. You wonder how much of the former assistants might stay on, considering Ben McAdoo's relationship with them. Who knows? That could also be affected depending on what Tom Coughlin does and his, if he ends up getting a job in Philly. Who knows? We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But I think when you take a look at this and you wonder, moving forward now with him, this keeps Eli in the same system, which is great. You mentioned we don't know what's going to happen in terms of calling plays, but it's just continuity, and I think that's something the Giants value. We've talked about that before, where the Giants kind of maybe not going down the straight line, because obviously moving on from your head coach is a big deal, but you're not taking a 180 shift here. Maybe you're going 270 degrees instead of 108 degrees.
Well, and John, I keep going back to the track record and the history of the organization, and we talked about this earlier in the week. There's only five GMs in the history of this organization, so you can understand, you know, patience and continuity is something that this organization prides itself on. And then if you go to, you know, head coaches, as I said, I was monitoring back till the first ever head coach in the 20s. You know, there's a track record of the assistant being promoted to the head coach. You know, you go back to Ali Sherman, who was an assistant, to Alex Webb, to Ray Perkins, to Bill Parcells, Parcells to Hanley, and now Coughlin McAdoo. This is not a first. This is not uncharted territory for the Giants. They have had this in place where they think highly of their assistants, and then they give them the green light to move up the ladder. And this is going back all the way into the historical archives.
Yeah, no question about it. And when the Giants, you know, make this decision, they decide for somebody to give this job to somebody that doesn't have the head coaching experience. They had interviewed people with head coaching experience before, like a Mike Smith, like a Doug Marrone. They decided to go with the more inexperienced person in terms of being a head coach, but someone that is very familiar with the personnel that's already on the team, and they hope knows how to use these players to get the most out of them.
Well, and I think that that's something important to weigh, especially when you look at the progress of the offense, and when your veteran quarterback, who you just invested right, a great deal of money in, John, publicly campaigns for the fact that, you know, he wants to see the continuation of that offense. That doesn't mean that that was the end-all, be-all factor, but I'm sure it wasn't something that management just overlooked and brushed to the side. They clearly value, you know, what Eli Manning has to say, and we've seen a lot of veteran quarterbacks, we've seen young quarterbacks who have gone through a variety of different offenses. Now, one school of thought, John, would say, well, hey, if you're a veteran quarterback, you should know the language. If the scheme changes a little, you can handle it. And I'm sure Eli Manning is in that category, but at the same time, we've seen the Alex Smiths of the world, the Mark Sanchez's of the world, who have basically gone through one offensive coordinator after another, one new offense after another, and it's impacted their growth and development as quarterbacks. Now, I'm not comparing Sanchez and Smith to Eli Manning. That's not the point. The point is continuity in this league, I think, gets tied into success more often than not.
And, of course, success leads to continuity, because if you play well, you're not going to have a lot of moving pieces, obviously, except for teams that, like the Bengals, who have lost a number of coordinators to other teams trying to find head coaches. And that does happen with some teams.
But they've promoted. I didn't mean to interrupt, John. But they've promoted from within the Bengals. I mean, the Grudens to the Hugh Jacksons. Yes, you changed people that are calling the plays, but the system has remained the same. You haven't really tweaked or made dramatic adjustments to that.
And we talked about trying to figure out the staff, and this is official. The Colts have officially announced that they've hired Jim Herman, the Giants linebacker coach, the last few years. So the Giants, one way or the other, will have to figure out who their linebacker coach is going to be. And again, guys, I know there's reports out there, but there are no official words on assistance yet. I know there are a lot of names floating around, whether or not they're going to keep Steve Spagnuolo around. We could talk about the pluses and minuses on that, but I do not have official word on that. But we can discuss, obviously, what's going on with the head coach's position. 201-939-4513. Fans, don't forget that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Chris in Syracuse is up first. Chris, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, good, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Chris. How are you, pal?
Great, man. Hey, listen, I love my wife. Sometimes she can really not make up her mind. And this is the closest
this
I feel like
I've some type of an analogy I see we're getting to eventually.
This is the closest I feel like I've ever been to inside her head. Because I really, I'm all over the map on this. I don't know how I really feel about it. In one hand, I'm kind of excited about, the McAdoo hiring, if that, becomes official. I love Tom Coughlin. Thought he's a great coach, great guy. But 6 out of 7 seasons, we weren't in the postseason, so I'm not entirely opposed to making a change there. I'm not sure if we went high enough, but I know you guys have talked about all that ad nauseum. The fact that Coughlin may wind up in Philly is one of the things that, like you said, I guess we got to cross that bridge when we come to it, but it does kind of sour the thing for me a little bit, because I feel like he was kind of a mentor and then obviously really close, long relationship with Eli, and let's face the facts, Philly's already been whooping on us for years, so I was kind of hoping, I am kind of hoping maybe this will help us turn the corner there, but I guess the only question that I really had for you guys was, do you foresee any chance that if the Eagles want to hire Tom Coughlin, the Giants decide that they want to kind of play hardball and say, hey, we're looking for a second-round draft pick, or we'll eat the $6 million in cap space, or whatever the case may be. And I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks, guys.
All right, Chris. Appreciate the phone call. I don't see the Giants, based on what John Mara said in his end-of-the-season press conference, standing in the way of denying Tom Coughlin an opportunity to become a head coach elsewhere.
Again, it's not like the Giants fought for him to stay and Tom Coughlin quit. That's not how this went down. Tom Coughlin said goodbye, and the Giants were like, okay. From the way John Mara kind of explained how that went, that's how it went. So I don't think that would be a situation where the Giants would demand a king's ransom. I should mention that there are other reports out there that the Eagles had Ben McAdoo in their crosshairs as their head coach. So this might also be one of those deals where you don't want to have your fellow division rival get somebody on your staff, but now they might end up getting a different guy on the staff. Who
it's
knows?
Just a different player, if you want to phrase it from that perspective.
There are reports out there that Coach Coughlin is meeting with the Eagles for another second time today.
Yeah, another face-to-face
meeting.
Whether
that's true or not, who knows, but there is a report out there saying that.
Indeed.
201-939-4513. BW's on the line. He's up next. What's up, BW?
Hey, I was calling basically to I want to wish Ben McAdoo, congrats, but I feel like it's Jerry Reese that put us here, and by Mara's hiring McAdoo, they basically saying that it was Coughlin's fault, even though they said at the end press conference that it was personnel why we failed. So why would you not want to come in a different direction in terms of offense, defense, when you had a two-time Super Bowl winning coach? If you was just going to hire Ben McAdoo, you should have just brought back Coughlin, a guy who knows how to get the Giants in line to even possibly win another Super Bowl, especially since that's the only coach Eli ever had.
Well, BW, I think you make an interesting point. I don't think, frankly, John Mara really wanted to you know, enunciate on all the reasons he decided to move on from Tom Coughlin. Basically, all he said was that all good things must come to an end. This was the time. He didn't really get into specifics. And I'm guessing the reason is that, look, Tom Coughlin's been here for 12 years. They have an immense amount of respect for him. They don't want to throw darts at the guy and kill him walking out the door. So the owner has his reasons. Maybe he'll get more into what those reasons are. I'm sure he's going to talk whenever the Giants make their announcement on the new head coach, and maybe we'll get some more insight then. But he also said, as you mentioned during the press conference, that especially with the defense, if this defense is going to get better, the personnel on that side of the ball has to get better. And he said that a number of times. There are enough good players there. He decided to keep Jerry Reese in his position and give him the opportunity to rebuild this team on that side of the ball, and that's what they're going to try to do this offseason, and they hope that Ben McAdoo's a guy that can not only coach a team the next few years, but coach him for maybe the next decade if he turns out to be a very good head coach.
I think we all want that, but the problem with me is that Jerry Reese has had, he's had, when you look at Coughlin's failures, that's Jerry Reese's failure too. You know what I'm saying? Let's keep it real. The Giants haven't been the only dominant team they had under Coughlin and Jerry Reese was the year after they won the first Super Bowl when they beat the New England Patriots.
In 2008.
That's the only time they was dominant as a team, you know what I mean, where you felt like going into every Sunday they was going to win that game before Plex shot himself.
Hey, look, in the BW, I think ownership sees what you see. I mean, you heard John Mara say in his press conference, and I'll paraphrase him again. We're going to get some of these quotes up on our soundboard. We're going to play them next week a little bit. That, you know, the reason the team has struggled the last few years is because they're, you know, the personnel has not been where it needs to be, and they know that. And then John Mara said that that is our failure, and he's including himself in that when he talks about the front office. He said this is our failure, and they know that it's on them to put better players in the field, BW. So even though they didn't make the change you seem to think that you wanted them to make, they understand the problem and they will try to remedy that this offseason.
Well, I hear you, but see, the thing with Jerry Reese is that I don't think he's a good roster builder. I don't think him and Tom Coughlin was ever really on the same page. For example, Tom Coughlin needs a tight end that can block. Jerry Reese has failed to provide him with a tight end that can block. Even last offseason when he said, hey, we can't count on Victor Cruz. The fact that you do nothing, even though you didn't expect him not to play this season, the fact that you do nothing to try to give Odell some help, you know, basically speaks to the fact that this dude has no idea what he's doing. Even when he says he's gonna do something, he keeps taking players, veterans and replacing them in, with players out of the draft. Now, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but what I'm saying is safety last year was a problem when we had Antoine Roll and Quentin Dentz. So how was getting rid of Antoine Roll and replacing him with Landon Collins? I'm not saying Landon Collins is a bad player, but how was getting him to replace a Pro Bowl player on your team when safety was already an issue makes your defense better? How does that make your team better when you keep replacing players? Like, we could have had Collins.
Finish up, BW. Finish up, man. You've been on a while.
All right,
wrap
fault,
it up.
But
that's okay.
We could have had Lindell Joseph and Hankins playing together. And the defensive line right now wouldn't look as bad as it does. That's all I got to say. But I'm just
all right, thank you, buddy.
All right, BW. I mean, you have to understand, in terms of the salary cap restrictions, you know, I mean, the plan that was in place was, you know, you draft the next guy who could replace the guy that's going to test free agency.
Now, in retrospect, would you want to go back and maybe sign Linval Joseph? Yes, but at the time, I understood.
From a financial perspective. Yeah. I mean, that would have been difficult. Plus, keep in mind, that wasn't the first time they did something like that, John, because Barry Cofield was let go, and Linval Joseph was his replacement. The same thing happened with respect to Hankins and Linval Joseph. So, once again, I go back to track record to explain perhaps some of the decisions on the personnel side. And, you know, I mean, at the safety position, I think the goal was to get younger there so that you could start to build up, you know, the nucleus. The problem is, you know, Burhey winds up getting hurt. You know, Cooper Taylor in and out in terms of the injury bug again. Some of these guys that they were banking on, you know, unfortunately the injury struck them once again.
Hey, look, and it was a risk. Hey, look, when you decide to go young and rely on first and second-year players at a position, there's risk there. And they opted to take that risk, and it didn't work out. I mean, they had a bunch of different starting safeties. You had to pull Brandon Merriweather out of the free agency at the very end of camp, start of the regular season, and it didn't work. And I think, I mean, I don't think anybody would argue that point, that the safety position was a problem this year. 201-939-4513. Jason's in New Jersey. He's up next. What's up, Jason?
Oh, man, I am just so happy right now. I'm ecstatic when I got the news last night.
Good to hear, Jason.
Yeah, I'm just telling you right now, it's going to be an exciting era of Giants football coming up. I've watched every single press conference with Ben McAdoo. This guy is brilliant. I think he has a vision. And back to what I was saying about how the head coach and the offensive coordinator weren't on the same page, well, that problem was immediately fixed because it looks like Ben McAdoo is going to bring in Joe Philbin as the offensive coordinator, and they're both on the same page scheme-wise, philosophy-wise, play-calling-wise.
Well, Jason, I got a question for you. Do you really think this offense is going to look that much different next year than it did this year? Because I don't think it is.
Absolutely. Let me tell you why it is. Let me tell you why it is. Gone are the days of being obsessed with balance, being obsessed with playing the field position battle. Let me tell you why. Ben McAdoo, in one of his early pressers, he gave a specific nugget about his formula. He said he wants a 13% explosive play ratio. And then the reporter followed up by asking him, what do you consider an explosive play? And then Ben McAdoo says, I'm not going to give that away, basically.
Okay.
And then the reporter asked him, why 13%? Because that's an arbitrary number. Ben McAdoo said, looked at him, had a smile, and he said, to win. So the way I look at it, the way you create explosive plays is speed. So now that Ben McAdoo is the head coach, I feel like we're going to put the personnel on the field. We're going to load up on speed players. So we have Beckham at number one, wide receiver one. We have Cruz coming back in the slot. That's speed. Look for Lamar Miller. He played under Philbin in Miami.
Okay, but you're listing players now. I asked you how the offense is going to look different in terms of schematics.
I just told you. Gone are the days of being obsessed with balance.
Ben, so you aren't going to run the ball anymore. Running's over. You're not going to run the football anymore.
No. I said balance, it doesn't mean not running the football. I'm saying it's not going to be balanced.
You realize the Giants in the games they won ran the ball more than in the games they lost, right?
Yes, I know, but it's a certain time to run. It's running when Eli recognizes they're playing 6-7 in the box, they're playing a dime package to stop the pass, and then you audible to a big play running back, he makes one cut in the hole, takes it to the house. We're going to put speed on
that
the field.
That easy.
Listen, it's going to be matchup nightmares everywhere on the field, okay? It's going to be Beckham. It's going to be guys complimenting Beckham. It's going to be the defenses won't be able to cover everyone. And then Ben McAdoo will be super aggressive with Joe Philbin at the helm. It'll just be, full-fledged West Coast offense. No more the Coughlin,
Wait, Jason, I have one question for you because we've had this argument now for the third time you've called up. So I'm going to ask you one more question, and then I'm going to pass you off to Lance, and I'm going to shut up,
thanks.
I promise.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay?
This is my one question for you. Do you believe the Giants were more aggressive with more big plays throwing down the field with Tom Coughlin and Kevin Gilbride, or were they more aggressive making big plays down the field with Tom Coughlin and Ben McAdoo?
Okay. Kevin Gilbride's base offense was under center. Eli Manning under center.
Jason, can you please answer my question?
Ben McAdoo's base offense is Eli Manning in the shotgun.
Okay.
Different kind of offenses.
That's
fine.
When
you put Eli under center, it makes it harder to pass. It makes it more predictable.
Jason, can you answer my question?
Wide open offense,
good luck getting an answer on that one.
I'm trying to explain why the Giants will be different.
No, but that's not the question that I asked you. The question I asked you, because you said the offense would be more explosive. Do you think the Giants' offense had more big plays or were more explosive under Tom Coughlin and Kevin Gilbride or Tom Coughlin and Ben McAdoo? It's a very simple question. Which one?
Kevin Gilbride's offense had more turnovers. It'll be more explosive under McAdoo with fewer turnovers. Kevin Gilbride's offense was a quarterback killer because it put the quarterback in position to throw interceptions.
You do realize that Eli Manning had the best year of his career with Kevin Gilbride as offensive coordinator, right?
Yeah. And he also has a 65-28 touchdown interception ratio with McAdoo. And that ratio, by the way, is going to go up even more. Eli might throw for 40 touchdowns next year with McAdoo at the helm.
Jason, to say you're going to be much more aggressive and make more big plays but also turn the ball over less, that's a very difficult combination to pull off. Usually if you're more aggressive, you're trying to make more big plays, you got to do 5-step drops, you got to do 7-step drops, turnovers tend to go up.
No. That's not how McAdoo's offense works. Look, it's going to be quick step. He's going to put more speed on the field. So the receiver...
McAdoo's not the GM, he's the coach. You want to just navigate speed?
The ball off. You're going to make plays after the catch. He's going to have a big play running back in the backfield to make defenses play,
Well, Jason, your whole premise is, listen, I understand where you're coming from, but your whole premise is based on personnel changes. And, you know, I mean, that's really unpredictable at this point.
No, personnel changes in the vision of the head coach. Tom Coughlin had his own vision of what he wanted his team to look like. Ben McAdoo and Joe Philbin, they're coming from a different, completely different school of offense. They want... Look, you'll see. Just watch. You'll see.
Well, time will tell, Jason. Listen, appreciate the phone call, but you have to understand. I mean, let's not be naive and to think that Ben McAdoo and Tom Coughlin did not consult one another and had no conversations over the last 2 years in terms of how their vision of the offense was, I think would be extremely misleading.
Well, and this is the argument I had with him last time. He seems to have this impression that Tom Coughlin doesn't want to have big plays in his offense. That's all Tom Coughlin's offense was in 2011. It was big play after big play after big play.
Correct, with Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz. Plus, if you look at the numbers this season, they had a lot of big plays with Odell Beckham. Beckham, I believe, I don't have the numbers in front of me, John. I think he led the NFL in the most catches over 50 yards. Or Eli Manning was even up there in terms of the most touchdown passes for over 50 yards this season. They were up there in terms of big playmaking ability. I mean, I don't really think that that vision is going to change dramatically. I mean, listen, could some personnel tweaks here or there give them some more flexibility
Absolutely.
And creativity? Absolutely. But the core principles are still going to be in play because McAdoo's still here. And even if he does, let's say, hypothetically bring in somebody from his school of thought, I think that's just going to further enhance what his principles are as opposed to dramatically change them.
And I think Jason under the impression that Ben McAdoo wasn't able to run his offense the way he wanted to. I mean, he was the offensive coordinator. Obviously, him and Tom Coughlin, you know,
they had conversations every single week.
But to think that all of a sudden, because Ben McAdoo's the head coach, you're going to get all these more super explosive players, they're going to be faster, and magically everything's going to work better when the same guy was your offensive coordinator the last 2 years. I don't get it. I think it makes it way too simplistic. Way too simplistic.
I think it depends on, you know, the makeup of the roster. And, you know, One of the players that Jason threw out was Victor Cruz, giving them more speed. I mean, remember, Victor Cruz is a question mark at this point in terms of how effective he's going to be even when he gets back on the field.
Yeah, and if Victor Cruz was good and healthy for 16 games this past year, yeah, the Giants' offense would have been more efficient. It would have been more aggressive, and it would have been better. Of course it would have been.
So, I mean, that's one player that you're banking on who, at this point, has some question marks.
And he is right. Under Ben McAdoo, Eli Manning throws fewer interceptions. That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. It's a much more shorter passing game, three-step drop, all that sort of stuff. That's 100% on the money.
Yeah, but he did that, though, with Tom Coughlin running the show. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Coach,
I mean,
right.
I don't really think that Ben McAdoo is going to turn around tomorrow and say, now we're not going to have any more short passes.
That's why I don't understand how it's, I don't know. I don't get it. Jason, we're going to have to agree to disagree. I'm not going to go through that with you again because it makes my blood pressure go too high.
No, I wouldn't mind watching from afar. But anyway.
That was the call I told you about yesterday. Remember?
Oh, okay. Now it's all coming together.
Remember, fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Abdul in Minneapolis. What's going on, Abdul? How are you, pal?
Hey, guys.
Rescue me.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a frustrating phone call. But to go in a different direction, you guys keep bringing up the Giants' history of being patient and keeping the course and not making too many changes. But one of their darkest periods was the 70s, and they kept the course. And they kept the same GM and same coaches. And the NFL had to step in and make them change.
That's fair. And you're absolutely right about that.
So sometimes that undying loyalty could be a hindrance.
No, Abdul, you're right. And we were just explaining the thinking. We weren't advocating for it. We were just explaining.
And I'm just showing the other side of the coin of that thinking.
I hear you. You're right.
And another thing, I'm not going to poo-poo this decision because we don't know. You know what I mean? It is what it is. But everyone has pointed the finger how Eli's had the best some of the best statistical numbers with McAdoo. But also, a guy named Odell Beckham also came the same year as McAdoo. And
good
so point. How much influence has that had on the offense? Because the few games that Odell Beckham wasn't around, the offense didn't look too good. And that was McAdoo making the play calls. So that's another thing. And
Well, Abdul, in fairness, I'll let you continue. I just want to piggyback off of your point about, you know, games that Odell wasn't involved. The Vikings game, you know, that's one thing. Remember, the first four games that Odell Beckham missed were the first four games that Ben McAdoo was a play caller. So I think you also need to put that in perspective. He was getting his feet wet at the same time that Beckham wasn't on the field, in fairness,
at least,
if you're going to evaluate the production level of the offense.
But look, Abdul, you're absolutely right. Odell Beckham's presence is a game changer. As good as Akeem Nicks and Victor Cruz were in 2011, neither guy is the impact player as an individual that Beckham is, and he does elevate the entire offense around him. On that, I don't think anybody would disagree with you. You make a good point.
Okay, and what my final point is that, which kind of leaves me the worst taste in my mouth, is it looked like Tom Coughlin has been scapegoated. They really haven't made any change. You know, the Giants have not made the playoffs 6 out of 7 years, and the only thing they've done is got rid of Tom Coughlin, right? So it seems like that the organization thinks that the only reason why we haven't done anything is because of this man. And that, and I'm not sure if that's really what they thought, but that's the perception that everyone, you know, I've watched a lot of talk shows. I'm off today at work, so I'm watching some TV. And, you know, Skip Bayless, you know, all these talking heads.
Abdul, why are you, first of all, Abdul, save yourself the trouble. Why are you watching Skip Bayless? That's your first problem.
It's something I thought of last night when I heard this. It was kind of a slap in the face of Tom saying, you know, you are the reason why we were bad. You know, it's, you know, it wasn't Jerry Reese. It wasn't your coordinators. It wasn't, you were the reason why we lost. You know, thank you for your service, but you're the, we don't need you anymore. You are the reason, you know, thank you. Goodbye. And that just leaves a bad taste in us, because I don't think that's a real honest assessment of the situation. And I think that's the ownership is kind of acting out of a lack of a better word, cowardice. They don't want to make the big change. And I really think they're not having a real honest conversation about what's going on with this team. And that's just the perception I have right now, because Tom Coughlin was not the problem with this team. And it and not getting another person, if they got a new head coach, Jackson, or that's change. And I understand the wanting to keep continuity with Eli and McAdoo, but they made their bed by doing a piecemeal reboot. You know, they kind of paid themselves in this corner. And they should have broken down everyone 2 years ago and got rid of Coughlin, coordinators, everyone, and just restart again. But they didn't do that because they don't like change. But that's what I'm saying. Sometimes the lack of change could come back and bite you in the butt. This is not going to happen. Hopefully, McAdoo will tweak it enough next year, and with Philbin, whoever, and Reese suddenly wakes up and realizes his lack of, you know, not getting linebackers and whatever. Hopefully, it's a big wake up, and this offseason is going to be great, and we're going to come back gangbusters. But, you know, sometimes, you know, I don't want to be, you know, right now I don't see enough change for that to happen. But hopefully I'm wrong.
Abdul, appreciate the phone call. I mean, you know, a big part of change is obviously going to come through free agency in the draft. I mean, let's not forget about that. And, you know, if you go back to John Mara's press conference, John, remember, you know, one of the things he emphasized, and you brought this up, when he looked at the defensive roster, you know, he said, we got work to do. So, I mean, the reason why I keep bringing that up is, you know, we could talk about all the head coaching candidates that were out there that the Giants interviewed, and we could talk about if this guy was hired versus that guy was hired, John. At the end of the day, you know, how this team comes along, how far this team comes along, is going to come down to the players that put on the uniforms every single day and where that production is, regardless
Absolutely.
Of how you want to analyze the scheme, the numbers, and the coaching staff. It's still going to come down to the players that are going to put on the uniforms next season.
One other thing I want to know too, Lance, and very quickly, then I want you to bang through some more calls. We're going a lot along on these calls, guys. We're going 5-6 minutes. I want you to get to as many people as possible with all the big news coming down. One thing to note on the Giants' offensive numbers this past year, I'm taking a look at the total defense stats this year. The Giants were fortunate enough, just based on the schedule, the Giants were worse in the league in yards per game. Second worst team, the Saints on the Giants schedule. Third worst team, the Eagles. Giants played them twice. Fourth worst team,
49ers.
The Niners. Giants played them. Fifth worst team, the Redskins. Two games against them. So 6 out of the Giants, 10 games on the schedule, were 4 out of the 5 worst defensive teams in football. And that can skew the numbers, too, sometimes. So,
absolutely.
That's just happenstance and luck. The Dolphins were 8th worst, and then you get teams kind of in the middle. They did play the Panthers, who are one of the better teams in the league, who are near the top. And the Patriots are up there, and so are the New York Jets. So it balances out a little bit. But they did have the fortunate circumstance of playing four of the five of the worst defenses in football.
Defenses that also struggle. That's why a lot of those games are so high scoring, especially
right.
that Saints game.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. Melissa's in New Jersey. Melissa, good afternoon. How are you?
Hi there. I'm going to rant as shortly as possible.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to say that, first of all, I'm excited for the future. There's nothing I say is about McAdoo or what the future can be.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm sorry. I agree. We let go a Hall of Fame-bound coach with two Lombardis because we needed change. We didn't change anything else. And now our beloved coach might very well go off and coach the Eagles. So, you know, really, I don't know. They should have let him coach out his contract if everything else was going to stay the same. And I'm sorry, but the character of Tom Coughlin in the last press conference shows. When people asked him questions, how he responded. How did Jerry Reese respond when someone asked him a question? He said, hey, do you have your research on that? Did you back it up? Well, you know what? They did back it up. They put it out all over Twitter. It is disgusting because Skip Bayless is tough on Tom Coughlin, but he straight out said today he hopes the Eagles take him because they backstabbed him. They scapegoated him, and honestly, they disrespected the man. And I wish nothing but the best for him, and I hate to say it, but karma's a new year. You know what? And if the Eagles take all next season, well, Marin Tisch can look in the mirror and know that there's a bunch of angry fans that are I don't know. I'm just really wound up about this. I just think it's awful what they did to him.
All right, thank you, Melissa.
Well, Melissa, appreciate the phone call. You know, it's interesting. One of the last questions that John Mara was asked in his press conference, John, I think one of the reporters brought up the fact that Wayne Weaver, the former owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars, after he got rid of Coughlin a few years later, admitted that that was one of the worst decisions that he ever made. So, you know, one of the reporters phrased it to John Mara, is it possible that down the road you can look through that same lens? And John said, listen, that's possible. So, I mean, they understand the impact that Tom Coughlin had on this organization, and I don't think anybody is going to, you know, say that he didn't do his due diligence here as his head coach and he didn't work hard. I mean, I think that showed in his final press conference. Change is a difficult thing to have to come to grips with, I think, on many different fronts, and you're not going to know the true results of a decision like this, unfortunately, until down the road when we start to see results if Coughlin goes elsewhere and what exactly, you know, Ben McAdoo does. But, I mean, this is a transitional period right now for the New York Giants because, you know, as I emphasized at the top of the show, change does not happen very often when it comes to this organization, especially a guy who helps you win two Super Bowls and has been here for 12 years. So, you know, this is uncharted territory to a certain degree, especially when you look at how many individuals have had the title of head coach and how many have had the individuals of just people of influence within this organization. This is not a team that goes through this type of period very often.
And here's some news from Adam Schefter 2 minutes ago. 49ers expected to choose between Chip Kelly and Mike Shanahan for their next head coach, per league sources. Decision likely within 24 hours.
Well, Kelly reached out to them based on reports, so that's not necessarily surprising.
And so did Shanahan.
Shanahan, correct. He became a hot commodity over the last few hours.
He interviewed the Dolphins, too, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, making the rounds. Former Redskins
Wants
coach.
Wants to get back in there?
Absolutely. Well, we could have a lot of former NFC East personnel around the NFL.
I'll say this, and I think I said this on the show a couple weeks ago. Everyone made fun of Shanahan for how he left, you know, Washington, how he handled RG3. What did Mike Shanahan say about that quarterback situation in his final year? He thought Kirk Cousins wouldn't be the guy. Turns out it might be right. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones. John is in New Jersey. John, what's going on, pal?
Yeah, hey, Lance, John, thanks for taking my call.
No problem, John. Thanks for calling in.
What do you got for us?
Yeah, I would just want to say I couldn't disagree more with the previous caller. I think Giants ownership was very patient with Coach Coughlin. You know, had three losing seasons. I think everyone involved with Coach Coughlin is very grateful to him for those two Super Bowls. But, you know, sometimes it's time to move on. Me as a fan, I lost confidence, put confidence in him with a lot of the mistakes he made this year. The whole Beckham mess in that game, never disciplined Beckham. And I kind of compare this move to Mike Tomlin taking over for Bill Cowher.
Similar organization, by the way, in terms of stability and structure.
And someone else actually made that comparison, John, from earlier in the day. And you know what? It does make sense.
Yeah, and McAdoo's a smart young guy. He's in the same mold as a Coughlin. He's a blue-collar guy. He's a hardworking guy. He's a grinder. And to me, it's a great a situation to reload versus rebuild the organization, and it gives us a chance to win another Super Bowl with Eli Manning.
Well, and I'm sure Manning has absolutely no complaints based on, you know, what he expressed publicly to the media.
Yeah, he's happy.
He obviously was campaigning very strongly for Ben McAdoo. And he was even asked in a hypothetical situation if, you know, McAdoo was thought of as the top candidate, you know, what have you seen out of him in terms of how he interacts with the players and everybody on offense, from Manning to Beckham to offensive linemen, were very complimentary of what he's done as an offensive coordinator and how he commands a room. So I don't think he's going to have to wait a long time till he earns the respect of the players in that locker room.
No, absolutely not. The players have all tweeted out, and they've all seemed to be very much in favor of it. And I think that's when people talk about continuity not having changed. The most important thing, and John Mara said this in the press conference, is getting the right man to lead the team. And in his time here, Ben McAdoo has showed those characteristics that you need to be that type of leader, which is, you know, again, the Giants haven't made it official yet, but if they go in that direction, that's why he's the choice. Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania. He's up next. What's up, Joe?
That's why he's the choice. Let's go to Joe.
Joe, you got to tune down your computer, and you got to pick up the phone and have a conversation with us. We
is
are
Joe
all
there?
Ears.
I Joe? Think we might have put Joe to sleep.
All right.
Joe going
Apparently
once
Joe's in another world
Joe,
right
we'll
now.
Talk to you next yes. time. Greg in Virginia. Hopefully Greg's paying attention. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, guys?
How are you
doing?
Doing well.
I'm doing, Greg.
Good. Hey, first, I just want to say that I'm real hopeful and curious to see how McAdoo does. Just like all Giants fans, I want the best. And, you know, so I just want to put that out there. I wanted to make a quick point about Andre Williams. I was poking around at some stats and noticed he had a 2.9 yard average this year, which is tied for 199th in the league.
Yeah, look, Andre Williams, and we're not going to sugarcoat it here, Greg. Andre Williams had a rough year this year. He really
yeah, he's averaging
he had trouble.
3.1 in his career, which is abysmal. Just moving on, I don't want to spend much time on that. But I am curious to see if McAdoo even dresses him, because he's not a pro running back. He's terrible. And it actually is concerning that we actually considered moving up to grab him. It says a lot about the scouting department. Also, they said that they were considering taking Reuben Randall number in the first round over David Wilson that year in the draft, which is very concerning. But moving on, my main point was about Mara, and I'm a little worried that, you know, we're turning into like the Lakers of basketball. You know, we're living off of, you know, previous accomplishments and the last name. I feel like if we were, you know, these decisions that are being made are like, they don't even make sense.
Well, Greg, in fairness, I think Eli Manning has a lot more left in the tank than Kobe Bryant, if that's the road you're trying to travel down here.
No, I'm just saying that, like, if you listen to that presser and you watch what's happened, it doesn't make sense.
What do you mean? How so?
Like, we're giving Mitch Mara the benefit of the doubt. Well, he's just pretty much his, you know, reasoning was it's been 12 years, but it's another department. If it wasn't Mr. Mara, we'd all say that doesn't make any sense.
Well, but Greg, look, here's the thing, and I said this before. I'm sure John Mara has his reasons, and I'm sure he didn't verbalize them all because, like you said, he didn't really give any specific reasons as to why it was time to move on.
But
I think that was – no, but Greg, I think – and again, maybe I'm wrong. This is my assumption, and I could be wrong about this. I don't know. But – and again, maybe we'll hear more when John Mara addresses the media when the Giants hire a new head coach. We'll find out. But my guess is that he has so much love and respect for Tom Coughlin, he didn't want to throw darts at the guy on his way out the door. You know what I mean? He wanted to give him a nice soft landing as he walked out, not criticizing him, not killing him, and not, you know, kicking him in the you-know-what as he walks out.
Yeah, and I respect that. And you know, Coughlin obviously deserves that, and I think he deserves a little bit better than what he got, in my opinion. But it doesn't make any sense. You know, it's like Abdul said, we're just slowly but surely doing this, and we're trusting that, you know, it's Mr. Mara and he knows what he's doing. But really, you know, the Super Bowls that we won when, you know, he was the owner were based off others' decisions, not his. And so we're just assuming that he's a two-time Super Bowl winning owner and he knows what the hell he's doing, but you know, in reality, this is his first test.
Well, Greg, in fairness,
his first test doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but, Greg, in fairness, in the press conference, and again, this almost belies the moves that they made, but John Mara was very clear in the press conference, and Lance, you can attest to this as well, that this team's not going to get better next year and become a contender because of a new head coach. They're going to get better and become a contender because they get better players.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I hope I'm a huge Giants fan. You know, I want the best, but I'm worried that this could be the beginning of like real dark days, like, you know, like top five picks, you know, being the norm until, you know, if your ownership doesn't understand that what the root of the problem is, I mean, keeping Reese around, then it doesn't really matter who's the coach. Like, you know, it's about the players and, you know, talking about moving up for Andre Williams.
Well, they didn't move up for Andre Williams, first of all. Like, they drafted him in the fourth round. They did not move up.
Devontae Freeman was picked in that round.
Just to correct you, though.
No, he said in the presser they talked about they were thinking about doing it, not that they
actually
did.
Oh, okay, because, well, the way he was saying that was as if it was a fact.
I watched the combine, and he couldn't catch a football, and he wasn't overly fast. And it's like, you know, it's like you picked Ron Dane, you know, just because he had production. You know, what do you really bring to the table? We all know he can't catch. We all know he's not fast. And you don't just bulldoze over everyone in the NFL. That's not how it goes. So what was the value? Just a player? Like, you know.
Well, Greg, look, and thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Look, Andre Williams has not been effective as anyone would have liked. I think everyone can say that in fairness, and I go back and forth with my buddy Jim in Ecuador about this online all the time. And, look, Williams had a pretty good stretch in the last year when he was a starting running back and was getting his 20 carries a game. But other than that period, he's been a disappointment. And if you listen to the radio broadcast, you hear Howard and Carl talk about him, the things he can do better to be a better running back. But that has not worked out as well as they would have liked. I don't think anybody would make that argument.
No, he seems to be a rhythm type of running back. And when he gets, you know, two or three carries, it seems to be difficult for him to, you know, gain that momentum, gain that rhythm. And even if you go back to last year's rookie campaign, John, you know, he took over the starting role because Jennings got hurt. But in those games, Williams was getting, you know, sometimes 15 to 17 carries a game.
20 sometimes.
He was the workhorse. There was really nobody else that he was sharing the wealth with. Yeah, and Shane Vereen wasn't even on the roster. So, you know, some running backs, I think there's some validity to the fact that they just need volume to perhaps be effective as opposed to them coming in, you know, as a little change of pace back. And remember, he comes from a program at Boston College where he was also the workhorse.
Correct.
He wasn't a change of pace back.
That's clearly true.
Wasn't a receiver, too.
But as a player, you have to adjust to the situation
you're
put in,
and
you have to take advantage of your opportunities. And if you listen to Carl analyze him on the radio, sometimes he doesn't think his vision's as good as it should be, things like that. So that's something that he'll have to work on and try to figure out if he can earn his way onto the field next year in whatever running back grouping the Giants decide to go with. Charlie's up in Portland, Maine. How are you, Chuckles?
Hey, guys.
How are you, buddy?
How are we doing, Charlie?
Good. I'm good. The waters will rise, the clouds will darken, and the shining light will appear over Gotham.
Charlie in Portland,
Maine. That miracle will happen.
I didn't know that you had a love for poetry, Charlie. I'm impressed here.
Hey, you know, I got a couple of things. Of all the people that we interviewed, there was a lot of people we didn't interview that I would have liked better, but for all the people that we actually interviewed, I think McAdoo is the best. But continuity sometimes equals mediocrity. And when JR wasn't fired, I knew McAdoo would be our coach because Myra was not – is it Myra or
– Mara. Mara.
M-A-R-A. Well, you love butchering his name.
Mara.
Yes.
Okay, I want to get that right. Was not going to make any changes. So he was into continuity. So I knew McAdoo was going to be our coach from the beginning, which is, you know, I'm fine with it, you know, compared to who we interviewed. I think he has more of a potential than any of the other guys that already had coached.
Well, you know, Charlie, to me, if you're going to hire a coordinator that doesn't have a lot of experience, go and get the guy that knows the personnel has been here. I think I agree. That makes a lot of sense. If you were to go hire, if you wanted to put experience on top of the list, I thought Mike Smith would have been a great option. To be honest with you, he's had a great record in Atlanta, and a lot of people don't like him. I happen to think he's a pretty good coach. But, again, I agree with you. If you're going to go coordinator and you're going to try to get a guy that doesn't have a lot of head coaching experience, I would have definitely chosen McAdoo over the other guys.
Yeah, I agree. So the only thing that I look at is I think, you know, for, say, Tom Coughlin, if he gets the Eagles job, this guy is drooling because he's going to have – DeMarco Murray is his running back. Matthews' change of back, and he's going to have Sproles as third down back. He's going to turn the Philadelphia Eagles into a running team with play action from Bradford if they re-sign him. And their defense is going to get better because they're not going to be on the field as much with Chip Kelly's offense.
That is true.
I can see the Philadelphia Eagles being the old New York Giants, smash mouth football. And if Coughlin takes it, I see that's where they're going with that. So I hope we can defend the run because we're going to need to. But I think McAdoo is, you know, if we're not going to make a change, and it's totally up to JR. He has to get us the personnel, especially in free agency, to get this done. And is he going to do that? My feeling is I don't know. I don't think so. His track record doesn't tell me that he can. But maybe because he's on the hot seat. Maybe,
well, Charlie, let me just interrupt you for a second because this is what you're talking about, and this surprises me. Adam Schefter reports on Twitter, and I quote, Tom Coughlin is withdrawing his name from consideration for the Eagles head coach job per sources, not the right fit. How about that?
Wow. There you go.
I'm honestly surprised by that, too. Wow.
Me too. Totally surprised. And I guess he doesn't want to coach because, you know, that would have kept him on the East Coast, but what's a half hour away or an hour away from New York. But that's good. That's good to know. So
maybe that'll pull some Giant fans off the ledge a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not upset with the McAdoo hire because I knew it was going to happen from the beginning. I told you guys that, you know, 3 weeks ago. So let's see what happens, and I hope everything's good.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, all right, Charlie.
Appreciate it.
The phone call.
Wow. I wonder why that's not the right fit for Tom. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
And I know they don't have a quarterback in place. Maybe that's what's getting them. Maybe they were going to make him keep on some assistant coaches, and he wouldn't be able to bring all his guys in. Maybe that. Maybe it's a, you know, voice and personnel thing. Who knows? That's interesting.
There's a lot of different reasons, I'm sure, that, you know, came
Philly
into play.
Philly is so close to New York.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, there's a lot of reasons why it would make sense, too.
Surprising.
But, you know, who knows? There could have been a change of heart. Remember, this is the second face-to-face meeting. Sometimes in the second face-to-face meeting, you hear things that, you know, were not necessarily presented in the first meeting, perhaps.
Now, I would bet that their next target would probably be Doug Peterson. That's the other name that's been heavily mentioned for them, the
Kansas
offensive
City
coordinator
Chiefs.
For the Chiefs, former Eagles backup quarterback, former Eagles assistant.
The other guy that I would not overlook is their current offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur.
Yeah, that's
who
possibility.
Who I think they could wind up promoting as well.
Here's a question. Does Peterson call the plays in Kansas City, or does Andy Reid call the plays?
That's a good question. I don't know what the exact breakdown
Andy
is.
Andy Reid calls them?
I know. I'm sure that there's both involved heavily in the process. I could tell you that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, obviously. I know Andy Reid has the big sheet in front of him, and that usually means he's calling the plays. But I'm sure Peterson, obviously, with a big big role in that as well. And one other thing from Schefter, this is somewhat tertiary, but apparently Hugh Jackson targeting Tennessee's Ray Horton as his defensive coordinator, but uncertain whether Titans will grant permission to leave. If you remember Ray Horton, he did a very good job as DC of the Cardinals a couple years back. And see, he has since moved on to the Titans, where he has not had quite as much success. And it just shows you, do you know what makes coaches really good? Players.
Absolutely. And they had brought in Dick LeBeau, too, remember, in Tennessee.
They did. All right, guys, we got 4 minutes. I got three calls. Let's get you all in. Robert Allentown, you're on Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you, Robert?
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing
How
great.
How you guys are doing?
We're doing great, man.
Hey, man, I'm a G-man from 1985. I'm a big, big fan from Bleed Blue. But one of the things that I'm a little concerned myself is, you know, I think that they didn't take a little bit more time on a head coach. I mean, McAdoo, he's done great with the offense. I appreciate it. He's done real good things, you know. But I would have liked to see a little bit more experience. And it's surprising to me that there's still a lot of good coaches out there, like Lovie Smith. That was he's a, you know, a good coach. He took the Chicago Bears to the, you know, Super Bowl. I think that he would have been a good fit. I think that they went ahead and they should have taken a little bit more time on the head coach, a little bit more experience to Mike. Every coach that I have seen the Giants pick usually has a little bit more experience under their belt. I think McAdoo is good, but I still think that he still needs a little bit more time before he becomes a head coach.
I think that's fair. Robert, look, he's only 38. He's only been an offensive coordinator for 2 years. I think it's a fair concern. We'll see if it's warranted when he starts doing the job in the next couple of weeks, if the Giants do, in fact, announce his hire.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm hoping for the best. You know, I'm hoping, and of course, you know, I know that we need some players, especially on the defense. But like I said, I think McAdoo has done a great job in that offense. I'm just hoping that, you know, he basically, you know, taking him away from the offense and getting another offensive coach, that doesn't change. I hope that doesn't change our offense, you know, the way it's going right now, because, you know, his attention on that right there was real good. Now he's going to be, you know, doing other things, and I'm a little concerned on that, you know?
Well, that's why you have to see who he brings in to round out the staff.
Thanks for the call,
because
bud.
You're right in terms of, you know, who would become the play call. I'm sure he'd want somebody that he's comfortable, that he's worked with in the past. But, you know, getting back to the point that the last caller brought up as well as the others, you know, I'm going to read you a John Mara quote, and this is why, you know, it's not just necessarily coaching. The record indicates we do not have enough championship-caliber players. That is on us, end quote. Those are the words right out of John Mara's mouth in his end-of-the-season press conference. So, you know, there's two aspects to this equation to get this team back to the point where they can compete once again. And I think that that certainly sums it up, in addition to obviously some of the tweaks they're going to make with respect to the coaching.
And I don't know what he's going to do, and I'm sure he'll make the best decision possible, but for a first-time head coach, calling plays and handling the head coaching duties can be very difficult. Not saying it can't be done, but you see a lot of coaches do that at first, and then they will eventually pass those duties off. So we'll see what the Giants and Ben McAdoo end up doing.
Well, and even, John, if you look at the current NFL landscape, I mean, Mike McCarthy, he had the responsibility. He gave it up only to take it back at this point this year. But very few head coaches actually call plays because, like you said, they want to be able to focus on game management. I think that's important. You could also use the Cowboys as an example. Jason Garrett called plays. Then he all of a sudden surrendered that too. Why? Because Dallas wanted him to focus more on the game-to-game management issues, and that's usually the right game plan.
Angelo, Dallas, you're up next. Ange, what's happening?
Nothing much, fellas. How y'all doing?
Go ahead, Angelo. You got 60 seconds.
Just real, I'll try to be fast on this. Just real quick on that. I heard there's rumors that Ben McAdoo may pull somebody like Joe Philbin from Miami, which I think would be good, going back to what you said, if he can get someone that has similarity as far as his concepts offensively to go out and call plays for him while he does the head coaching thing. I think that's a big task for someone who's only been an OC for 2 years.
I agree.
You know, so I think that would be good for him.
Agreed.
It's just interesting how fans don't understand sometimes this is a business, and I think there's a lot of rumors about Ben McAdoo being a higher prospect for the Eagles, and how would we feel if Ben McAdoo left and went to the Eagles, and then we're stuck with Eli Manning with only maybe a few good years, prime 2, 3, 4 years left to go ahead and be prime and actually win the championship now, and who knows what kind of quarterback we'll get. At the same time, I think that Ben McAdoo having experience with Eli, maybe some Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, to develop another quarterback, maybe a Ryan Nassib, whoever else may come in. So I think there's more to just letting go of Coughlin and keeping Ben McAdoo, who provides the consistency. I think he handles the New York media very well, keeping things close to the cuff. So I actually think he'd be a good fit. And change is difficult, but, I mean, I think it would be a good fit for us right now, especially with Eli. And as you said, with Mara going back to the personnel, personnel is very important. I was interested about the Steve Spags staying on board, but I mean, true enough, we need personnel. But the only time he really shined, if you will, was during the Super Bowl season in 2007-08. So I'm curious to know, how is it really that much talent that's really gonna propel him to be that top-notch shining star again at the D.C.? I don't know, and that's the only thing that scares me. But Jerry Reese knows, and he said it last year, I think we offense needs to score 26. And Ben McAdoo has always been part of an offense that's been in the top 10. So as an offensive league, we have to go ahead and think, and Ben McAdoo, I think, is the right course. If we're going to do change, do it with consistency in the style of Marin Reese, and just hopefully we can get that defense on board.
All right, thanks, Angelo. No doubt about it. Look, you got to score points, and you hope with better personnel the defense is better next year. We all agree. All right, Brandon, New Jersey, you only got 30 seconds, pal. We're already over our limit. Right. Go ahead. Be quick.
Real quick, I think Ben McAdoo is a good choice. Now, I like the Joe Philbin. They saying Joe Philbin going to be the offensive coordinator. My question is, will he call the plays from the sideline? Because I know he used to call the plays from the booth.
It's a great question.
I think Eli is more comfortable with the offensive coordinator on the sidelines than inside the booth.
Now, I'm trying to go back. In the past, if I recall, Tom Coughlin seems to have a preference for his coordinators on the field.
He does.
I don't know what Ben McAdoo will think. If I recall, when Ben McAdoo was quarterback's coach, he was up in the booth in Green Bay, if I recall that being correct. And I remember it was a big deal that he had to go down to the field.
And have Joe Philbin on the sideline. My other thing is, I think Bobby Hart is the future of the right guard position.
David Deal thinks so.
And I think we're going to need a right tackle probably out of the draft. It was one more thing I wanted to say. Heck, I know I'm going to forget it before I get off it. I forgot what I was.
That's right, Brandon. Now you have a reason to call back tomorrow. Yeah. It's all good.
I know, but I like the Joe Philbin thing. I just hope he caught the plays from the sideline.
Thanks, man.
And I hope they keep Bobby Hart at the right guard position.
We got it.
Because those four spots, Flowers, Pugh, Richburg, Hart, all we need is a right tackle. And you know how I feel about the defense. I like keeping Spags on board with the continuity as well. And like I told y'all, we need a middle linebacker, free safety, and a couple of defensive linemen. And we right back. That's why I think we took the road to get McAdoo, because we're not far away, I believe. We're not far away.
All right, Brandon.
The draft way.
We got to go, pal.
Right. Thank you.
All right, Brandon. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, he certainly threw out a number of different players that I think have some potential on that offensive line. You got a young nucleus now, and if you throw Bobby Hart into that mix, I mean, that's 4 out of 5 guys that you've drafted within the last 3 years.
David Deal has told me many times he believes that Bobby Hart can be the starting right guard next year. He thinks he has the talent for it. Now he needs to go out there and prove it. He'll have the opportunity in training camp in the spring. It's a long time to go before our opener in September of 2016. All right, we should hopefully get some type of official words, some shape or form by hopefully tomorrow morning. We'll see. And then hopefully we can do a full show tomorrow at noon, maybe before or after the press conferences, depending on when they happen, and we'll kind of go from there. So, Jay, stay tuned to Giants.com. We'll have official word. Follow the Giants on Twitter. They'll let you know exactly what's happening with the Giants and, you know, what they end up officially announcing today or tomorrow and what direction they go in. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. I'm with Feagles tomorrow at noon. We'll see you then on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Have a great day, everybody.
Have a good one.
He's got through. 35, 30. Broken
intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!